Abel Kenhauser. Try that again. Start again. Abel Kenhauser, age 38, sits in his pickup truck in the parking lot of the Cat Box Cafe awaiting the 11 p.m. shift change. He has been sitting there slouched behind the steering wheel for nearly 4 hours, alert for any untoward change in the atmospheric conditions around him. He slowly stretches his cramped feet and knocks over an empty styrofoam cup on the floor. The noise, inaudible outside of the truck cab, sounds like cannon fire to Abel, and he jerks upright, accidentally brushing against the volume knob on the stereo. A hyperactive disc jockey had been playing static for 15 uninterrupted minutes on the radio. But suddenly the gentle susurrus changes into a deafening roar of alpha wave particles waging war on hapless magnetron oscillators, and Abel has to switch off the ignition to stop the racket. He holds stock still, the only sound coming from the jingling of the key ring in the ignition. Glancing furtively about, he satisfies himself that no one else heard the commotion. In fact, no other vehicle is parked within 50 feet of Abel's truck, and a nearby kennel of dogwood trees helps conceal him even more. Relaxing somewhat, he checks the barometric pressure, wind color, and nuclear antimatter bandwidth, and enters the data in his notebook. So far, everything appears normal. Everything, that is, except for the fact that he has, in the past hour, heard the word Mesopotamia uttered 11 times, and his truck has been twice circled by 4 hooded characters in an old Hudson wingback. Inside the cafe, Emil and Dorodny are in a booth hunched over a huge plate of mashed potatoes. The mushroom gravy sits idly by in a tureen on which cherubs suck on ornate hookahs in basso rilievo. Blanche had served the gravy separately, so the two wizened trenchermen could deal with the potatoes on their own terms, which is to sculpt the mash into a realistic likeness of a certain fusion energy device as alien to the cafe as our beanbag chairs to the trilobite hunter-gatherers of the New Guinean backcountry. The hands which carefully knead and massage the pliant tuber mound have done so dozens of times before. And as whatever it is slowly takes shape, a few cafe regulars crowd around the booth to watch the finishing touches. The time is 10:55 p.m. The Hudson, driving without headlamps, slowly turns off of East Main Street and pulls into an employee parking space. Through night vision field glasses, Abel observes 3 young, giggling women in waitstaff attire pile out and saunter into the building. A 4th person remains in the idling car, fiddling with what looks like a cellular telephone. He, or she, the hooded parka conceals the person's genderical persuasion, attaches a whip antenna to the roof of the car, opens the trunk, and pulls out a sophisticated-looking console from which green, glowing tubes protrude. working quickly, the cowled character connects a cable from the console to the antenna, flips a row of switches, climbs back into the car, and revs the engine, shattering the evening calm. Soon, however, the engine howl is displaced by another sound, a low-frequency hum that seems to resonate through the earth, but whose focal point is undeniably the Hudson. Abel can actually see shards of the deeply pitched oscillation emanate from the antenna, and as the pulsing increases in frequency, vision through his glasses begins to distort on the vertical axis. As his digital wristwatch chirps 11, email pours the gravy onto the potato sculpture. The brown slurry sizzles as it hits an energy field, and then the mound begins to flow in and out of focus. The size of the field grows rapidly, and within nanomoments, the entire cafe and part of the parking lot are also wavering between two uncomfortably different focal points. The visual slippage plays especial havoc with the Hudson, seeming to stretch its chassis among an assortment of divergent universes before the car and its occupant abruptly wink completely out of focus, at least on this visual plane. An afterglow from the headlamps is all that remains. That and the eerie murmur of the word Mesopotamia echoing in the suddenly chill air. Inside the cafe, the energy field is dissipating as normal focus gradually returns to the mound of potatoes, which once again resembles hearty diner fare, prompting Virodny to dig in hungrily. Emil withdraws a sparkling vial of thawed limeade concentrate from his coat pocket, takes a swig, and joins Virodny in the culinary dismantling of the potato-flavored tokamak. There will be much to discuss this night. Outside in his pickup truck, the 38-year-old former Whiskers six-straw champion jots improbable barometric pressure and wind color data into his notebook, sighs, and turns on his radio. The gentle susurrus of static has been replaced by this. The officially sanctioned pre-broadcast of the 119th episode of Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar. And he pauses to listen. His senses alert for any changes in normal radiophonic frequency modulation, nuclear tempi, or Le Flambeau Orange. But he hears only the voices of the aforementioned hosts, the imagined plop of warm, mashed potatoes entering a vacuum, and the occasionally whispered polysyllabic word which he has come to both anticipate and apprehend. A word which may be attributed to 4 hours of cramped car surveillance, or perhaps to Calvus.
To which one can respond nothing but Carl Stone.
Thank you.
Once again, Carl Stone has provided us with a remarkable piece of music. This is from his brand new compact disc called 1196 on EMT.
What's that number of takes that he had to abut to make this piece?
Who knows? I have not a clue. This just arrived. It has been released in England. It's not available in America. It's available in England and Japan. So, this is the only place you can hear it right now. 1196, music by Carl Stone. And I was thinking about that Cat Box Cafe, and I thought, well, you know, the new music Cat Box Cafe would have music like this by Carl Stone and others. So I thought perhaps we could have about 15 minutes of the Cat Box Cafe jukebox.
My, from such humble origins do these ideas for mixes spring.
So they do. So we'll begin with coming in the door at the Cat Box. This is music by Peter Van Riper. This is the Indian and Kong and baseball bat section of his piece, Direct Contact. And we'll be back in about 15 minutes with our interview, the end of our interview with Ann Southam. And other interesting news. And here is the, as we walk in to the Cat Box Cafe, as the Hudson engine was turned off and everyone has gotten out of their trucks, the Carl Stone Space Cadet music has vanished and all things become once again normal.
Thank you. Thank you.
sounds in the Catbox Cafe.
Are we supposed to believe that a couple of cuts ago, one person was perhaps experiencing some gastronomic difficulty?
I thought. Throatonomic.
Right.
Impressiveness. The sounds in the Catbox Cafe heard in the past 15 minutes.
You have a menu, do you?
We do, yes. As we walked in the door, we were listening to Peter Van Riper's music from Direct Contact. That was followed by Michael Lowenstern's piece Spasm for bass clarinet. Followed that with Chin Shin Chen's Points of Departure, which nicely moved its way into Jack V's Stigmata Non Grata. Sounds like a dinner food.
An a la carte, yes.
Yes. And then Linda Catlin Smith's Little Venice.
Venison, I thought that was.
Yes, Little Venison in the cafe. And Laurie Spiegel's Finding Voice.
Do go on.
I'm doing that, yes. And Maggie Payne's Desertscapes, reread as Desertscapes.
Right, right.
Of course. And there, the gastronomic moment, Sanko Namchilak's improvisation for Tuvan voice technique.
That was quite representative, I think, of the cafe.
Absolutely. And then the group in the corner was, of course, Henning Berg with Landmark from Tango and Company.
There were the band sitting in, is that correct?
Yes, Meringue and Company, yes. Mm-hmm. They were the band sitting in the corner. And finally, we're finishing up with the Bells from Anne Southam's piece, The Rivers, which leads us right into the interview.
Oh, how very convenient.
As we walked out the door, and there was the river at our disposal. And so that was a little excerpt from The Rivers that played by Louise Bissette. Shall we go back to Toronto after
Please.
We tell them what they're listening to?
I am eager.
The Calvos and Damien New Music Bazaar.
As opposed to what was listed in the newspaper. But
yes, true enough.
But where are we?
We are at the Catbox Cafe here at WGDR Plainfield.
I know it well.
Slow Rivers.
Slow Rivers.
Yeah, no, it's got, yeah.
Music by our guest, Anne Southam.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump right in with some more music. And what was the question you were going to ask there about
one of these recordings came about? As Christina Petruska.
Petruska,
of
yes.
course.
Petruska.
Petruska. She is Torontonian.
Mm-hmm.
And did you ask her to play, or did
yes,
she?
Yes, I did. I when would this have been? I suppose it doesn't matter, in the 1980s sometime. I asked her if she, I hired her to make a demo tape of some of my piano music. Because there wasn't a hope in hell of my ever playing it, because there's so many notes. And
that's why you need to go MIDI.
I know. I'm in two minds about all this, anyway.
Well, yeah, let's hear both of those. Let's hear both minds.
So, anyway, just to finish, I asked her if she would make a demo, and she did, and she kept two pieces in her repertoire. One is this Glass Houses number 5, and then there's another Rivers number 8, book 3 or something or other. So she plays both those pieces, and they're both very fast. She has amazing fingers.
This is after she left the dinner theater circuit.
Was she on that?
She may have been.
Oh, I don't think she was on that.
We just changed
a very
your
famous
history.
Piano. Mm-hmm.
What about your two minds?
My two minds about the technology, MIDIs and MIDification and computerization and everything. I think I'm opposed to the whole thing, just for fun. there's something about it that bugs me, and for some reason, I mean, on the one hand, I'm sure it's all great fun and thoroughly captivating, and on the other hand, I refuse to do it, and I don't quite know. I think I would prefer to stay in touch with the actual instrument. I mean, in my mind, I sort of picture, on the one hand, you have an instrument like a piano, and you think of the beautiful body of the instrument, whether it's the piano or the violin or the viola or whatever it is, all these conventional instruments. And over here, you've got a computer or a synthesizer or whatever, which is basically just a box about which there is nothing appealing. And so I would rather stay over here just with this mechanical instrument, really, and having to exert myself to make it work and use my own energy to make it work. Now, this is how I've got it all organized in my mind, and these are the differences that I see, and I'm kind of... it's just a way of thinking that I'm enjoying at the moment, so I'm sort of...
It's just intriguing that you worked in electronics, continue to work with electronics, the piece for viola and tape, and...
Well, I don't know. I mean, all my equipment is thoroughly out of date, and I don't think it even works anymore, and...
So you've abandoned the electronic...
Yes, I mean, I went up as far as voltage control synthesizers, and then when the ones that I had, which were just simple little Synthi AKSs, they were British, in a briefcase, and I thought they could produce wonderful sounds. I mean, I was never at a loss, and then they can't be repaired anymore, and anyway, that's not... So I just sort of wondered, do I really want to do this? And I liked it when you really couldn't nail things down much, and I don't know, there's just nothing about a computer or a computer screen that appeals to me.
If it were more ornate, if it had filigree and maybe some lace curtains?
No, because that would be kind of like an attachment. It has nothing to do with the way the thing works, whereas the design of the piano and the way it looks has a lot to do with the way it sounds. Isn't that true? And the same is true of violin and so on and so forth. So that the sound and the body of the instrument are very much related. At least that's how I imagine it.
I have lace curtains on my computer screen. It makes me feel much better.
And then you kind of pull them back, and there's...
No, I look through them.
Really?
It is hard. I don't see the corners of the screens anymore, but that's something I've learned to live with.
Well, that's a thought, you know, hanging lace curtains in front of the whole thing might make it more appealing.
Yes.
That's a thought.
I use it as a dust cover, a dust cover, a tea caddy.
The tea caddy.
I like that idea, putting a whole tea caddy over the whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, there's some hope here.
Not for me, but...
No,
sure.
Not for you?
No,
no hope for you.
None.
Oh.
But, pish-tash, let's push on.
Let's hear another piece. This one you got there. You got it in your hands.
Glass houses. 8:10. You say this is number 5?
Yeah.
Does
it not say that?
Must be from Monopoly.
Right. This is landed on Boardwalk.
Yes.
Yeah. It's right across the plate there.
Glass Houses. Performed by Christina Petrushka.
No.
Petrovska. Of course.
Yes.
Music by Ann Salem. Thank you.
Movie career didn't work out, so I slightly changed my name and tried music.
I thought it did, was going smashingly. I particularly like you in those Doily commercials.
We should have taken this whole interview on the assumption that I was Ann Southern. I think that would be a lot more interesting.
We can do it now.
How,
Mr. Conklin's right in the next room.
Yeah.
He's right there. Well, that was Glass House's music by Ann Southern. Talk about minimalist influence. I mean,
well, Steve Reich.
Yeah. But you don't notate every note here. You have, you actually sort of.
I try not to.
In some ways, you jump back to In C, how In C was
made,
a modular kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I also, I mean, I thought that was an ingenious way of devising a piece so that it would, part of the way, well, I'm not sure this is true of In C, but part of the way in which the piece works would be a result of the way it's written, so it's this kind of as you try to solve the problem of how to write something down, you're producing a new form or a new kind of music, which I like that. In C is kind of a game, and I think it works wonderfully well. I love that piece.
And so Glass House is, boy, it just has that pulse, pushes ahead, it's tonal.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
All of those things.
Uh-huh. And it's only written out on 2 pages.
Mm-hmm. So what are you writing now?
Well, I'm working on a piece for Eve Agoyan, and it's... again, it's the same old 12-tone row, and
can you hum that?
No, if I could hum, I could. So I'm working it yet another way. It's a process again of spinning this note out, or at least the row out, note by note, so that the phrases get longer and longer. And I'm also exploring long periods of waiting. I really like that. What happens to the player? What happens to the listener when there's nothing happening? And what are you going to do with that time? And how do you remember what you've just listened to? And what else comes to bear on this time when nothing is happening? And I do like the business of waiting. So I'm exploring how you might set up periods of waiting in which nothing happens. Things are definitely happening. It's just having to keep still and having to wait. That's very hard to do.
Much the way we are waiting for funding for our radio.
Yes, patience. This is a whole lesson in patience.
Patience is
Don't
not
give
the
up.
First word that comes to
mind. No, it isn't.
No.
Funny about that. What does come to mind? What is the word?
Aggravation is right up there. No.
Mm-hmm. No, being infuriated, yeah.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Of course. Well, speaking of all of those things, how do you survive? Do you survive as a composer?
Of course not.
Uh-huh. I took care of that. I thought we were going to have a revelation here. I was waiting for the voice of God to say,
nope.
Yes, I do.
No, I don't. I have an independent income, which makes life much easier.
But you're a very prolific composer, by all appearances. And
prolific?
Yeah, it seems so. And
what makes you say that?
All those numbers, actually.
I should say I'm writing the same piece over and over, and I just...
Well, Mozart did that.
I've done the same thing. That's why the numbers are so high.
We'll have a cataloger with little, you know... catalog of music by Ann Southern, X432.
That's it.
What's it like being a composer here in Toronto? There's a wonderful music scene.
Yeah.
Government support, popular support. What's it like?
gosh, I'm not sure that I'm the best person to ask.
Stack of CDs attests to something like that.
I think that there's a small audience. I mean, if you're judging by concert audiences, if that's any measure of the interest, I mean, audiences tend to be small.
Are they the same audience, or it's a loyal following? You're not getting new people that much.
I don't think so. I'm not a great concert goer, so I'm not a good person to ask. In fact, I don't listen to very much music, so I'm not a good person to ask about.
We can play some for you.
That'd be nice. This would be a good opportunity to find out what's going on.
But how has it felt for you to have been a composer these years here? What are your gratifications?
Well, I've been very, very lucky because at the beginning of my career, I got connected up with modern dance. So here were these people in the dance world. They were determined that they were going to make a place for themselves, and they worked very hard to get their companies established and to get performances going. And so I was in there as part of the crew, in a sense, providing music. So that there was a market for the music that I was, and so I would reach a kind of an audience through the association with dance. Mm-hmm. And so I think in that sense I was very, very lucky. So that somewhat I would be known that way, so that if I were to go to musicians, that they might already know who I was and ask them to play, say, a piece of music, they would already know who I was. So I've been immensely lucky.
If you had to point to something you've done and said, this matters, this has made a difference.
Made a difference?
Yeah.
You mean, to whom?
Whatever it means to you.
This has made a difference.
Yeah. This is important. It has something to say about the history of life, culture, music, this one thing I've done, or this group of things I've done.
Ay, ay, ay. A lot of dead air over this one.
We'll be pulling your answer underneath. Even before you tell us what it is, we and the audience will know.
I point to my association with dance. I think that that's been an extremely fortunate collaboration, in that we were all kind of starting off at the same time, sort of with me and the electroacoustic stuff, and then the modern dance getting going, and the two of us sort of working together and being quite happy with what we had to offer each other. It was an absolutely wonderful collaboration, and I'm thrilled to have been part of it. That much I know for sure.
All right.
Okay.
That's good. So let's play ourselves out with something. What shall that be?
I'd like to hear that 12-tone row one more time.
If only I could sing it. No, I'm sorry, I can't. The 12-tone row one more time. Maybe one of the... There's a very short Bells Rivers piece on there somewhere. It might be, I'm not quite sure. You'd have to play them all, and then I could tell you which one I mean. Well, I don't know. It's one that has only one note in the right hand.
We'll find it.
You'll find it.
We'll find
it. Well, there's one on here that's 3 minutes and 18 seconds. That's probably it.
Let's do it. Which one is that?
It's number 16. It's number 4, set 2.
Lovely title.
Is it?
Yes,
it is.
It's very evocative.
You like that?
I do.
Good. I'm pleased.
Thanks so very much.
And Southam, thanks very much for joining us on the Calvos and Damien New Music Bazaar.
Thank you.
And we also like to thank our guests here at the Amblecote Bed and Breakfast, in whose very nicely redone old manse our interviews are being conducted. And here we are. What was that number for? Number 1635.
That's it.
27.
That's it.
Rivers using by Ann Southam. Thank you.
Music by Anne Southam, played by Christina Petrovska. That was Rivers, Book 3, Number 8.
The river was getting a bit deep there after a while.
Yes.
He was trying to wade through it, but couldn't quite make it to the other side.
Still,
it was quite enchanting.
Yes, indeed. She was fun, and I think her music is really, really interesting just because it has gives itself enough time to get done.
Right.
It doesn't, like, okay, I've got 2 minutes, now I'm going to do this. Oh, now I'm out of ideas, I'm going to put something else in here. Oh, here's the... And, like, just, okay. It starts here, and it has places to go, and it eventually gets there, and it makes you wait. I don't think anything of hers we have is under about 8 or 9 minutes long.
Now, I wonder if she used a music writing program that allows cut-paste copy.
Well, she did tell us she doesn't use any.
That's what she says in an interview, but we don't know her true means.
Her true means and motivation?
Right.
What are the three criminal things there?
Means, motivation, and a good lawyer.
That's it. Let's. We have some pieces we haven't played that we have received. These are original recordings by the composers, not compact discs. So I thought we'd play a few samples of some of these composers who will be our guest at some point. The first is David Denniston. We hope to have him on the air at some point. He was here in Vermont, but we just missed him. So we just couldn't connect with him to do our interview. So let's play a little bit of a piece called Marimba Moto. And beyond having listened to it, I don't know anything about it. I can't quite tell on first listening whether he's used electronical means here or real live players. My odds would be placed on the electronical means.
Yes, because the syntho cough about 5 minutes into the piece just doesn't stand up to a real person.
Real scrutiny.
Yeah, yes, yes.
All right, well, for the Catbox Cafe show, here we have Marimba Moto, music by David Denniston. There. Excerpts from Marimba Moto by David Denniston.
Part of the Smorgasbord, always available.
The Smorgasbord? Or the
Borgel Smorg. Always available at the Catbox Cafe.
Yes. That must mean that Jean-Luc Picard is nearby if there's a Smorgasbord. Otherwise, it's just take little snippets of folks and jump them down. Yes, David Denniston. Let's move right along to something by Vermont composer David Robert Stewart, the Telemachos Ensemble, which is his. And, there goes.
Good fade.
Yeah, good fade. Wasn't that nice? Very elegant. This is from a group of pieces simply named G4, G1, G2, and G3. I believe this is G1 that follows G4.
This is some sort of governmental issuance?
I believe so. You'll understand as soon as you hear which government agency was responsible. Here it is, music by the Telemachos Ensemble, written by David Robert Stewart. Music by David Robert Stewart and the Telemachos Ensemble from a collection of G pieces. That was G1. David Robert Stewart, not yet our guest.
Has he vanished? Is he still about?
Yeah, he's still about. He's been working quietly. I believe he's in Bellows Falls. Yes, he's in Bellows Falls, and he's been working quietly down there for a few years. So I look forward to getting some more goodies from him. Actually, he was thinking about doing a live performance on our show, so we'll look forward to that. David Robert Stewart. Next we
Otto Luening was thinking of doing a live show, a live performance, and see what happened.
See what happened. Right. Next, music by Daniel Weymouth, who was our guest a few weeks ago. These are the Lorca songs.
Yeah,
you say they're brief, are they?
They are brief, and I stand corrected because I thought he was writing about whales, and I thought he said two orca songs.
Two
I was looking forward to hearing them, but no, these are by the...
You thought it was El Apostrophe, Lorca songs.
Exactly, yeah. Yes.
Les chansons Lorca.
But these are two short tunes that he wrote for piano and voice, and they are brief.
Two Lorca songs. The whales would love them.
Yes, the love of the whales.
Music by Daniel Weymouth. That's in response to a challenge that you made at the interview table at the Red Kettle restaurant.
You write songs, show them.
That's right. He was claiming he was in a rock and roll band, knew all about songs.
He claims he will write a third Lorca song should the occasion ever arise.
Well, send him some blubber. We've played occasionally some music by Erling Vold on the program, and he, when he sent us the compact discs on the Spooky Pooch label,
yes,
gosh, I wish I thought of that name myself, the Spooky Pooch label, also included a cassette and said, really, this is the best one. So let's play a little excerpt from the cassette Erling Vold sent along saying, this is the best one, called Sub Pontio Pilato, music by Erling Vold.
And to nothing really.
And as the crickets take hold of the vegetable garden outside of Tarnhelm, we bid a fond farewell to whatever it is.
Tarnhelm! Outside of Tarnhelm!
Sure. That you didn't find that Tarnhelmian?
It might have been.
The vegetable garden, remember, it's not in Tarnhelm itself, it's just outside the gates.
It's the Latin version of Tarnhelm. Tarnhelmus?
Sure, yes, yes. Who is this guy?
Erling Vold. He's this guy who has CDs out.
He sure does.
And some of the music is kind of keen. This is not bad at all. It's just got voices in it.
It does that, yes, yes.
We're just not voices people sometimes.
I was done after the Orca songs, but I'm glad to have heard this. Now I know better.
Well, voices today. I got a few voices. We will have a choral program coming up. I don't know exactly when we'll schedule that, but we have kind of been collecting over time choral music which we haven't played.
For a good reason.
Well, we just have this kind of prejudice, and we have to overcome it.
Yes,
we have to open our minds to the possibility of doing contemporary choral music that isn't, say, John Rutter.
Right, and where might we be opening our minds to this?
We'd be opening them right here on the Calvos and Damian New Music Bazaar on WGDR Plainfield.
That would have been my second guest, in fact.
Gaston here at the Cat Bucks Cafe, the gastronomical place.
Continue.
Oui, garçon, Gaston. And let's see, a few more interesting little pieces here. We have music by Robert Constable. He's the head of the Bonk Festival. And this is an excerpt that he provided us of his first string quartet for two violins, viola and cello, the traditional string quartet format.
Does he say if this is midi-fi?
No, he has not said that either. So here we go. Music by these all tapes provided by the composers for samples of their work for us to enjoy. So here it is, music by Robert Constable. The second and third movements, that's all he gave us, must have been something wrong with that first one, from his string quartet number one. Pretty energetic tune, isn't it?
It is, and I particularly like the part for gasping.
You think that was written in, or is just, you know, there's this thing that a lot of my violin teacher did this too. He had to breathe with his instrument, and so he did these nasal breath intakes before with his up bow, and that for each one. It was an amazing thing. His name was Joe Kovach, and I remember him standing there much shorter than I, and I'm not the tall sort, with his violin at the ready, weapon-like. And he would bring the bow up, and with it, the nose would grow large. It would like be larger than the violin itself, covering everything in sight. It would just, this amazing intake of breath. I wonder if this is a string player technique. Maybe we should ask that question. You know, Pablo Casals did it when he conducted. He breathed in.
And he sucked in a black hole of musicians and they all vanished?
Almost. I have this wonderful recording of him conducting the Mozart Eine kleine Nachtmusik in a live performance. And the microphone was much, much too close to him. And you would hear the music, you would hear. And it wouldn't be, I was conducting the baton. Ah, yes. Well, so maybe we should ask Mr. Constable whether or not he has written in the nasality of that.
Speaking of which, we did just hear
Robert Constable's String Quartet No. 1, the second and third movements. And now, Maggie Payne. One of the wonders of technology is that the cassette evolved into DAT as a digital audio tape as a wonderful means of distribution. And even more wonderful, at least as far as ourselves are concerned for broadcasting this music, presenting it to you in a live format, is the recordable compact disc. Because when we are inspired to play something, we don't have to wind our way through a tape, but merely find the cue on the compact disc. And so some of the recordings that we have received, the Peter Van Riper that we played today and some others, have been on these recordable compact discs. This is one we received from Maggie Payne, one of the leaders of the Mills Mafia, as it were, the electroacoustic composers to come from Mills College on the West Coast. This is Apparent Horizon, a piece just from last year by Maggie Payne. an excerpt from Apparent Horizon music by Maggie Payne. Maggie will be our guest next year when we make arrangements to
bring her here.
Bring her here, or maybe speak to her there at Mills College. She will be an online mentor for some students in Vermont this coming winter, and we'll talk a little bit more about that and how you can participate in that. Don't forget that we do have the Kalos and Damian website at www.maltedmedia.com. Be worth stopping by there and taking a look around. And I have some questions for you. You were in the studio last week. you were having your compact disc recorded. Let's hear a little bit about that.
It befuddles me how we receive so many of these compact discs. Do people have this much time, money, and energy and enough ego pounding to put these, get out these recordings? It's astounding.
Apparently so.
And people, some people just put them out without any effort at all. There is effort involved.
So there is. Well, you're going to give us a whole rundown of this in the next couple of weeks, or do you have
We still have.
When do we get to hear unedited excerpts?
I'm looking at the millennium.
I see. Well, speaking of unedited excerpts, past summer in Montpelier, Vermont, there was an institute of teachers and so forth learning how to use sequencing in MIDI, and they did a little collective piece, and I'm going to clean that piece up and bring it in here next week and have a little listen to how people who have had their first experiences in composition outside the realm of notes on the staff work together.
Oh, so this is a collaborative piece.
It's a collaborative piece in the sense that each teacher was given three words chosen from that kind of random poetry, that refrigerator poetry technique, where we had three adjectives and we had a list of adjectives, a second list of adjectives, and a list of nouns. And we asked them to choose three numbers, and then we read them the three words that represented the numbers they chose, and that was the theme of the piece.
And the three words were "stop that racket."
Well, they didn't come out ever to be things like that. We had one that was called "confused rumbling distortion," for example. And each was assigned to do one piece that was 2 minutes long, keeping in mind that the opening 15 seconds and the closing 15 seconds would be overlapped with someone else's piece, not knowing what that other piece would be.
Oh, good.
So it's about 18 minutes, and I'll bring it in here in the next couple of weeks. It'd be well worth taking a listen to what they came up with. It was actually completely inspired. It was very, very exciting. Speaking of exciting, we're going to go out with what? You've got something queued up.
Yes, just by the by, do we have a guest for next week? Or is this going to be a surprise? I think it could be a good surprise in case no one pops by the old
recording
studio.
We do have a guest. I was just rushing to pick up the... our guest. Yes, our guest next week will be Chris Konigsberg.
Oh, my goodness.
Speaking of headbangers. Yes, here's a guy who works in some high-powered engineering research job in Princeton, New Jersey, and can't stop talking about that rock and roll gig he had as a high school kid. Anyway, we'll talk to Chris Konigsberg next week on The Bazaar. And now...
finishing up from Jeffrey Haas, Keyed Up, a composition for two amplified pianos and tape, music from Seamus.
production of Multimedia.